The Panama Papers, the result of more than a year of secret labor shared among hundreds of journalists in dozens of countries, is an unprecedented feat of journalistic coordination. It's also a project that unfolded very differently depending on where in the world those journalists were located. So we called up a few of them. Apologies in advance for the bad phone lines. For some, the effort was bedeviled by the repressive regimes under which they live. In Tunisia, the online magazine Inkifada exposed the involvement of Mohsen Marzouk, co-founder of the current president's political party, in offshore holdings. But soon after those reports were published, hackers infiltrated Inkifada's website and changed the details, including the name Marzouk to Marzouki, Marzouki being Tunisia's former president and an opponent of the current administration. Eventually, the newspaper had to shut down its website.
And we had really violent answers from the public who is asking, where are the articles?
That's Sanas Bouai, an Inkifada reporter.
Is there someone trying to buy your silence? Are you making some deals with some people to not put the names out?
The International Consortium of Investigative Journalists and a South African-based news network have coordinated with Inkifada to ensure its reports can be read somewhere. Meanwhile, Reporters Without Borders has condemned the attacks on Inkifada's website.
And having those organizations standing next to us and saying that they're supporting us, that's really important because it sends the public a special message.
It also sends a message to journalists in Tunisia that their profession still matters.
Something that really touched me in this whole process is that today we are speaking about journalism who is collapsing and no more professionalism and everyone running after the buzz. Well, actually, we manage almost 400 journalists all around the world. We don't know each other, and we manage to keep it secret, and we manage to get into the deadline and to make it happen. There are still journalists who care about the way they do their work, who are really professional, who collaborate together. So that was amazing to see that.
Egyptian journalist Hisham Alam was pressured by government officials not to publish his stories from the leak, but he went ahead, revealing that former President Hosni Mubarak's son was involved in a secret offshore company registered in the British Virgin Islands. Hisham said that the global network of journalists working on the Panama Papers served as a shield against Egyptian censors.
Because in case if you are threatened or for some reason get hurt, your colleagues, they're going to continue your work and they will publish your stories. At least you're not standing alone. Your story is going to be shown globally. And everybody will read it, everybody will see it, and the impact cannot be seized inside your country. Here, we use that authority. They are just calm down situation. Okay, we will investigate it. We will check the documents. And after a couple of weeks, everybody's forgetting the story. Now, nobody can forget it or ignore it.
Argentine journalists at the paper La Nación weren't up against the censors, but under the terms of the consortium, for nearly 4 months they were unable to publish what could be one of the biggest scoops in the paper's history. On December 8th, just 2 days before President-elect Mauricio Macri took office, they learned that he was listed as a director of an offshore company in the Bahamas. Macri had been campaigning on an anti-corruption platform, vowing to clean up the mess he said was left by the previous president. La Nación investigations editor Hugo Alcanadaman recalled when one of his reporters, Ivan Ruiz, told him the news.
The source of this information was providing more documents every week. So it was coming like in waves, you know? So every 2 weeks, you should be rechecking all the names that you had already searched on the database again. And on December the 8th, just 2 days before he took office, he sent us an email and said, "Hey guys, I found President Macri." And the first thing I thought it was, this is going to be great.
Not only couldn't they publish, Hugo and his team had to share their findings with nearly 400 other journalists and hope they wouldn't break the story first.
If you believe in miracles, that was a miracle. Because you had to keep 400 journalists with their mouth shut. You know, that's unbelievable. But it happened. It was wonderful.
What's also wonderful, he says, is that the Panama Papers gave reporters the chance to confirm what they'd already suspected, that the rich and powerful were having a party at the expense of their constituents.
This is like when kids are, you know, playing in a dark room, and you suddenly enter that room, turn on the lights, and you end up, you know, finding that a guy is jumping over a bed, another one is, you know, on a window, and the other one is throwing a shoe, and you say, what's going on here, you know? It was like that, that we were able to expose, to turn on the light in Panama. Not only in Panama, but around the world.
In Kenya, though, reporters and the public had a more tempered response to the revelations. Journalist Jacqueline Kubania found that one of her country's highest judges was linked to 11 shell companies, despite Kenyan constitutional law stating that it's illegal for judges, being state officers, to open offshore bank accounts. But, she said, when you live in Kenya,
you get used to the fact that corruption,
corruption is a fact of life. It's something that we struggle with maybe more often than people in other places. So I would not actually be surprised if a bigger story broke next week that will totally eclipse what we are doing with the Panama Papers right now.
In Ukraine, the revelation that the nominally anti-corruption president Petro Poroshenko may have used an offshore firm to stash assets and avoid taxes has been met with a surprising amount of debate.
It's really a top story of the week. It's discussed everywhere, you know, in the business circles, by the media. I hear the people, you know, really somewhere discussing.
Natalia Gumenyuk is the co-founder of the Ukrainian news site Hromadsky TV, one of the independent media outlets that have sprung up in the 2 years since Poroshenko was elected. While what Poroshenko did may or may not have been illegal, Gumenyuk believes that the fact that there is even a discussion shows that Ukraine has entered a new era.
The last year before 2013, it was authoritarian state with media controlled by the big business close to power and by the government with a censorship, when the government is more or less running and owning all the assets of the country. The previous president, they were known for stealing $100 million. And those kind of investigations, they were usually, you know, an issue for the professionals, for independent media, maybe for some of the political opposition. But you wouldn't have discussed that, you know, in public would be really surprised because that was an issue. But now in our case, it's the issue for every talk show. That is a huge change that for me, obviously, is a sign that demand for the public servants, for the presidents, are not just very high, but more or less normal, as it should be in the society where people care about the rule of law and wants their politician to be accountable, which definitely was not ever the case.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.